The following principles apply across the board. Whole and intact is better than chopped or sliced, which is better than diced, which is better than mashed or pureed, all of which is better than juiced. An apple, for instance, has got a fair amount of pectin, a soluble fiber in its skin. So if you eat an apple, your stomach has got to contend with the fiber before it can get to the fructose. Similarly, an orange has got its fiber in the pulp and in the white pithy stuff that clings to the flesh. But take that apple and peel it, and then juice it, and you've got something quite a bit different. The micronutrients and the fiber are in the skin. With the skin intact, it may take you 5 minutes to eat the apple, but it requires just a few seconds to drink the equivalent in juice. And keep in mind that the glycemic index number is in part determined by the speed with which you eat and digest your food or drink. This is why diabetics having a hypoglycemic reaction quickly drink some orange juice rather than eat the fruit. It raises their blood sugar promptly and relieves their symptoms. And while fructose is preferable to sucrose, a big glass of juice acts a lot like a soda, a pure sugar rush. This is especially true of processed juice made without fiber or pulp, which for many people is the only kind they get. The fiber delays your stomach and intestines' effort to get at the sugars and starches and carbohydrates. The fiber in vegetables like broccoli is cellulose, which is in essence wood. The nutrients are bound up in that fiber too, so the stomach has to work harder and digestion is slower. Fiber is not the only thing that gets in the way of sugars. Fats and proteins also slow the speed with which your stomach does its job on carbs. Eating a little protein or some fat, good fat naturally, along with your carbs is beneficial. A little olive oil on your bread or some low-fat cheese is actually better for you than the bread alone. Pasta with tomato sauce and a chunk of Italian bread is an extremely high-carb meal. Such a meal eaten with some meat or cheese is better. Sitting down to a nice baked potato for lunch isn't such a hot idea. Having that potato with a piece of steak and some broccoli renders it better for your diet than a potato on its own. You'll actually create less of an insulin rush, and you'll reduce the cravings for more food in the hours ahead. Here's a tip that will lower the glycemic index of any meal. 15 minutes before you begin eating, have a spoonful of Metamucil in a glass of water. It's true this is normally intended as a mild laxative, but it's simply psyllium, which is fiber, non-soluble fiber. When you swallow that spoonful, the fiber forms a slippery lump which makes its way through your digestive tract, clearing out anything in its path. When you take some before eating, the fiber gets mixed in with the food and has the effect of slowing the speed with which your stomach digests what you've eaten. When we talk about diet, we talk so exclusively about the things we eat that it's easy to forget how much has to do with the things we drink. But your body doesn't make that distinction. By the time your meal reaches your small intestine, it's all liquid. In fact, what you drink is critical because it requires little digestion and therefore goes more directly into your bloodstream. If there's sugar in that beverage, it will speed into your system, prompting the burst of insulin that leads to cravings later on. At one end of the drink spectrum, to no one's surprise, is water. By now, we've all heard the health gospel that we need at least 2 to 3 quarts of it a day. There's some question about whether we really require so much, but a good rule is to reach for water whenever you're thirsty. It's especially good for dieters because it creates the sensation of a full belly. At the other end of the spectrum is beer. As discussed, it has a high glycemic index thanks to its main component, maltose, which is even worse than table sugar. Wine and even whiskey are safer bets because they're made from different grains, vegetables, or fruits. Not that whiskey is part of any serious weight loss effort, of course. White wine is better. Best of all is red wine because it brings with it some significant proven cardiac benefits thanks to resveratrol contained in the grape skins. It appears that alcohol with a meal slows overall digestion, which may be the reason it can be good for a diet when used in moderation. It's no surprise that sodas are a major source of sugar, so I won't belabor it. Sweetened iced teas aren't much better. Coffee and tea, of course, contain no sugar on their own. People have grown accustomed to hearing doctors advise against them, but I don't think they're all that bad in moderation. Some diets steer people toward decaf for the simple reason that caffeine does stimulate the pancreas to produce insulin, which is the last thing an overweight person needs. Still, the effect isn't all that great, and if a cup or two of coffee a day makes you happy, I think you should feel free. Again, fruit juices are a big source of trouble, in part because we've come to associate them with healthy habits. They do carry nutrients, especially freshly made juices, but they also bring with them high levels of fructose, which can be the undoing of any effort to lose weight. Because I live in Florida, the best fruit example I can think of is the orange. A patient of mine began showing symptoms of diabetes. His blood sugar was suddenly up to over 400, not a good sign. He didn't have any of the conditions that usually are present with new diabetes, such as an infection or other stress on his system. I began quizzing him about any changes to his eating habits when he mentioned that a juice machine had just been installed in his office. He thought he was making a healthy choice by having two or three orange juices a day to replace the coffee he once favored. "Cut the juice," I advised him. "You're dumping too much sugar into your bloodstream." He switched to water, and the diabetes quickly disappeared. Therein lies everything you need to know about fruit juice. If you were to eat an orange, you'd get the same fructose as in the juice, but you'd also be getting a lot of fiber in the flesh and pulp and the membranes. Your stomach would have to work to separate the sugar from everything else in the course of digestion. In addition, you might eat one orange at a sitting, maybe two if you were hungry, or they were all on the small side. But peeling an orange is work, and eating one takes time. Not surprisingly, store-bought orange juice is the worst offender. Fresh squeezed, because of the fibrous pulp and the superior nutrients, is somewhat better. This holds for nearly all fruit juices. Pineapple juice, just loaded with sugar. Grape, the same. All of a sudden, it seems, America's parents fell in love with apple juice and began giving it to their kids with every meal. From a sugar consumption point of view, this was not a good idea. The skin of an apple is actually quite healthy. The pectin is good fiber that accompanies the fructose into your system. So eating an apple a day is still a prescription for well-being, but drinking its juice is not. If you must have fruit juice, try just a splash of it in sparkling water, a spritzer, in other words. When it comes to vegetable juices, you've got a bit more latitude, but the health food store mainstay, fresh carrot juice, isn't on the approved list. Carrots have a high glycemic index. Beet juice is said to be good for many reasons, but it too is loaded with sugars. I've heard that tossing a banana into the blender along with a little milk and some berries accompanied by ice makes a good summer smoothie, but bananas are among the worst fruits in terms of fructose content. If you knew nothing about nutrition and were asked to guess which fruits and vegetables contain the most sugar, you'd probably fare pretty well. The sweeter the taste, the more sugar is present. Watermelon is bad. Tomatoes are better. Broccoli juice would be best if anybody actually wanted to indulge in a glass every day with breakfast. So be glad that the South Beach diet doesn't require a big glass of broccoli juice every day. Now I'd like to talk about how eating makes you hungry. You may be thinking, how eating makes you what? Weren't you always under the impression that eating is what satisfies hunger? Well, it is and it isn't. Eating does put an immediate end to hunger, but some foods also create new cravings by making you hungrier than you would be if you hadn't eaten them. This isn't just a theory or a matter of perception. Dr. David Ludwig is the head of the obesity program at Children's Hospital in Boston, a physician who also teaches at Harvard Medical School. Dr. Ludwig recently studied how the breakfast eaten by some obese teenagers influenced their hunger levels hours later. Three groups of overweight adolescents were fed breakfasts of identical calorie counts. One group's meal was 20% fat, 16% protein, and roughly two-thirds carbs, but the good kind, steel-cut oatmeal, meaning the flakes were large and the kernel of the oat was unprocessed, so the fiber was intact. The second group also had a two-thirds carbs breakfast, but they were served instant oatmeal, where the fiber had been stripped away to permit shorter cooking time. The third group's meal was identical to a typical South Beach diet breakfast, vegetable omelets. After breakfast, members of all three groups were instructed to eat anything they wanted for the next 5 hours. The subjects who had had the bad carb breakfast, the instant oatmeal group, ate the most during the 5 hour period. They also reported the strongest hunger pangs. The teenagers who had had the steel cut oatmeal felt less hunger and ate less than the instant oatmeal group during the post breakfast hours. The group who had the vegetable omelets, the low carb meal, reported the lowest sensation of hunger and ate the smallest amount during the ensuing 5 hours after breakfast. This is one of several recent studies testing the theory that eating bad carbs makes you hungrier, and that on a good diet of good carbs and good fats, and the vegetable omelet combines both, you'll want less food later. I'll explain exactly why this happens, but for now, I want to emphasize what all the studies show. Eating bad carbohydrates, especially highly processed ones, creates cravings for more bad carbs, which ultimately is responsible for our epidemic of obesity. It's hard to overstate the connection between bad carbs and bad nutritional and cardiac health. In another diet and hunger study, subjects who ate whole fruit reported less hunger than those who ate puree of the same fruit, and those who ate puree had fewer cravings than those who just drank the juice. In various other research projects, scientists found that eating beans causes less hunger than eating potatoes. Raw carrots cause less hunger than cooked ones. Foods containing whole grains cause less hunger than those containing cracked grains. Ordinary rice causes less hunger than the instant variety. There's a term for the basic physiologic response to food that's behind all these findings: reactive hypoglycemia. I will describe exactly what that means, but before I tell you, let me share from my personal experience. For years, every day at around 3 or 4 in the afternoon, I'd find myself running out of steam, weak, sleepy, sometimes even lightheaded. Without thinking, I'd make a mad dash for the doctor's lounge, where I would inhale a bran muffin and a cup of coffee. I actually thought that since the muffin was labeled low fat, it was okay. In fact, the word bran was there mainly to keep people from examining the ingredients closely and realizing that the muffin was just a cupcake in disguise. I was lulled into a false sense of security. The fat in the muffin may have been low, but the carbs it contained contributed quite a bit of fat to my waistline. Having finished my snack, I instantly felt better. So give my body credit for knowing exactly what it needed: carbs, sugar. My body knew this because it detected that the level of glucose, the form sugar takes in our bloodstreams, had fallen too low. Glucose is a form of chemical energy that our brains in particular need on a constant basis in order to function properly. Without enough, we'd grow dizzy, faint, and eventually go into a coma and die. Diabetes is the body's inability to turn food into usable forms of energy. This is why without synthetic insulin, type 1 diabetics would not live for long. So my brain detects hypoglycemia, too low blood sugar, and my body reacts, hence the name reactive hypoglycemia, by creating the cravings that drove me, and maybe you, toward the nearest carbohydrate fix.